Join the Pop Life Podcast conversation. Follow us on Twitter at The Pop Life Podcast. Find us on iTunes at The Pop Life Podcast. Be sure to rate us, please, and find us on SoundCloud and share and like and subscribe. Thanks.
Welcome to the Pop Life Podcast, coming to you from the Crosby Collective Studio, starring your hosts, Jeffrey Sledge, Naima Cochran, and Sean Young. If it's top of mind in pop culture, it's up for discussion. Thank you for joining us this week. The Pop Life begins in 3, 2, 1.
Pop Life Podcast today is 22nd.
Yep. It's
because it's election day in New York.
Yeah, as we were just discussing before we came on air, it is the mayoral primary day and local election day in New York. And I was saying, this is one, the fucking mayoral race is a mess. Like, the people who are on the ballot, the people I ain't fuck with, I didn't even know Scott Stringer, who used to be our borough president, was on the ballot till, like, today. Although,
oh, you didn't know he was on there?
Although, apparently, he's been accused of
it was some
sexual impropriety.
He said he did it. He admitted it. But it was years. I mean, not, that, like, not that it matters. Yeah, it was a long-ass time
ago. I mean, honestly.
Not that it matters, but, you know, he said he's worked it out with his wife, and it's cool.
Yeah. I'm voting for Stringer only because it's the devil I know. The motherfuckers I know, and like out of the pool, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
But also, I want to shout out Chuma Osei, who is Reggie Osei's son, is running for city council in Brooklyn.
Okay.
He's really dope. And even though this will air when it's too late for anything to happen about, I also want to shout out my friend Stacey Lynch, whose father was Bill Lynch. He was Mayor Dinkins' campaign manager. Mm-hmm. He's running for city council uptown. So
is that the woman? Is she running against Billy?
I think
for the council.
Yeah,
I got. In fairness to the candidate, I got to give a shout out to Billy Council.
Oh Lord!
Well, Billy, you know Billy ran the Cove.
Okay.
So Billy,
I mean, ran the Cove.
I'm not saying he's
be a city council.
I'm just saying I'm giving him a shout out. He looked out for me. He gave me the Cove for my party, which felt like it was 100 years ago now, and he's a good dude. And that's all I'm saying. I'm not endorsing.
Ended up with niggas like Charlie Rangel in office.
Yeah,
1700 years.
Yeah, I'm not endorsing. I'm not endorsing.
Because be like that nigga. Let me have a spot for my party.
That's how it is. That's our man. Yeah, back. That's
the permit for the block party.
Yeah, that's real. That's real that shit was. Though. But that's real ass.
It
shit
is
you talking about. That's how Marion Barry stayed in office so long. Even when he was going through the crazy shit, because you know Marion Barry gave a whole bunch of people in D.C. jobs. Yeah. It was like, I don't give a fuck. If I didn't have Marion Barry give me a job, I wouldn't be living out here in PG County in his house. So I'm voting for him, crack or not. But anyway, so peace to Billy Council. I don't think I can even vote for him anyway because I don't live in that region.
No, I think district, if it's District 7 and covers Washington Heights too,
it might
not go up as far as you. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So
I'm going to the polls after we get off.
Yeah, me too. I'm going recording. To the going to the they got it at the temple right down the block.
Yeah.
I want to say, Ray McGuire, who also is running for mayor, I find it interesting that a few weeks ago there was a kind of push with Jay-Z and Steve Stout and Puff and some other music people came out with it. There's like a video where they would talk about, you know, Ray is our guy and Ray, you know, needs to be in office and so on. And that shit moved the needle zero.
Wow.
Zero. It didn't mean nothing. Well, first of all, because I watched it on, you know, my cynical ass, I'm like, you niggas don't even live here. Like, you niggas moved to California. Like, who the fuck cares what you think?
Right.
They ain't talking about niggas on bothering you. You live in L.A. But you know, no disrespect to Ray.
That's such an indication of where we are with politics, even on such a small local level, that it is about trying to gather support and just name and no real concept. Like, there's no connection with those people.
None.
To the people you need to vote for you, and not just vote for you, right? Like, if this is about your career and not just about raising your profile, right, you want to have sustainability. You're going to need people in and of that community to support you, to help you, to guide you. If you're not like
Sean's breaking up a little
bit. Freezing up a little bit, bro.
Calling for in those.
But while we're waiting for Sean to come back, the other thing I want to point out is that this is the first year that we're doing ranked voting in New York.
Yeah.
And I think that's going to be really interesting, especially really considering interesting. How deep the candidate pool is.
Yeah, really, really interesting. I wanted to, was something else. I got to wait. Oh, yeah, you back, bro?
If you guys can hear me.
Yeah, we can hear you. It was broken up before.
Is it storming out there really bad, Sean?
Yeah, it's raining. It's
bad out here.
Okay. Yeah.
It's raining. Yeah. It's raining here, too.
That was a very black question, I know. I'm just saying.
Is it raining out there?
How bad is it over by y'all?
Get off that phone.
You should get in the house. You need to not be in that car. You know that lightning going
to I got to go to Twitter and see if Kelly talked about her knee bothering her.
Yeah, you better turn all them lights off in that house. Oh shit! I was thinking about this the other day. And I'm going a whole other angle here, right?
Uh-oh.
So I saw a clip on I guess it's on YouTube or Twitter or something, and Instagram, one of the platforms, and somebody had filmed what's called the lightning ball, which is very, very rare. Uh-huh. And what happens is some scientific kind of way in a lightning storm, of course. Lightning will kind of form into a ball and kind of roll, kind of travel through, and like, you know, it's knocking out power, it's knocking out trees. It's a very intense ball.
Is it on the ground or does it travel power?
It's on the ground. It goes through stuff and knocks up stuff. It's very rare. But somebody was in Texas or something. They filmed it, and it was like, yo, and somebody commented, yo, that's some rare shit you caught. Like, that's crazy. And I'm saying that to say, so my Uncle David told me one time, he said, Jeffrey, sitting in the house, a storming outside, ball of lightning come running up the hallway. And I watched it roll down the hallway,
into
the kitchen, and it was a bunch of, boom, a big old explosion. And I was like, you know, 5 or 6 years old, and I was, you know, enraptured by this story, right? I'm like, really, Uncle Davey? Yes.
Like the plastic runner on the rug
and there was definitely plastic on the rug. It was my Uncle David and my Aunt Betty, bless their souls. And it was definitely plastic on the rugs. And I remember later on, my father was like, you know, your Uncle Dave was lying about that. Lightning ball ain't going no damn house. But then when I saw that clip, I was like, yo, maybe Uncle David wasn't lying.
Not up the hallway, though, Jeffrey. Up the hallway.
I know. I love my Uncle David. God bless him. Anyway, let's keep him moving. Bro, how was our Father's Day?
It was good. I ain't do too much. Got up.
Do any of us do too much on
Father's Day? Yeah, the kids took care of your boy this year.
Okay,
you know, I caught them at the down to the Neiman's.
Okay,
they was at the Pound 4 counter.
All right,
and so I said, that's why I tweeted. I was like, yeah, baby, they fucking came through for your man. So yeah, they came through. Good. But it explains something, because I don't know if y'all remember when I said, yo, you know, Jordan is at the mall.
And I remember said, that. I remember that. Yeah. I remember that.
Well, now I know how she had to go. You know, that's why my car was being charged.
Because she bought had me to go. Gift.
So with, she bought me the gift with her
with money,
money. And then bought her shit with my money.
Oh!
That was creative. At least she might go get some money.
You know, I couldn't really be mad. Yeah, I was like, yo, why is all these charges?
He just said technicality, but
you know. It was very technicality. She didn't spend it. She didn't wild out, but I could definitely see where she was short a little bit.
Yeah. put it on that one.
Yeah, literally, if you watch the charges, that's literally what happened.
Yeah, put it on that car.
Try this car.
Yeah, try this. You know, yeah. Julian and his wife, my daughter-in-law Amanda, took me out to brunch. There's a new spot called Santiago's Beer Garden. It's way on the east side of First Avenue. It took me out there early set because Julian had to work later that day, so we were kind of early, like 1 o'clock. But it was nice. It was a nice day. The day itself was beautiful. The weather was like this crazy summer day. We had a nice time sitting out there, you know, just chopping it up, talking. And then I walked all the way across town. Nye, did you know about the race around Mount Morris Park, they do every Father's Day. There's a bike race.
I had no idea.
Apparently, they've been doing this for like 30 years.
I knew there was. I know there was a foot race in, not a foot, but you know, like a race in Mount Morris mm-hmm. Park somewhere around June. It's a 3K. Mount Morris Park, which by the way, is not a game. Like it's damn near woods to me.
Yeah.
In terms of the race course. But no, yeah. I didn't know they did the bike race.
Yeah. They and it's like a real race. Like they had, you know, the timer set up and the finish line and people, you know, out there. Like, and I asked one of the cast, and they say, they've been doing this for like 30 years. I had no idea. So, and I ran into Whitney because Whitney was at Venetaria, took a DL for Father's Day. And then when me and Malcolm went and watched a little bit of basketball game. So it was a good day. It was a good day. And peace to all the fathers out there. You know, we deserve it, even though we don't get much on the Father's Day. You know, it ain't like
I bet it wasn't no line at that brunch. I bet it was easy breezy. Nigga could sit 20 people. Nigga sit 20 people. Party of 20, no problem. Come sit down, join all the tables together.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. Like, God bless her. Amanda made a reservation. She didn't have to.
Clearly, right? Like,
walk right in. You know, it was nothing. Yeah, you know. So, yeah, we know we don't get that energy. I watched In the Heights. I finished it. I watched it last night.
What'd you think?
Okay. Well, not. I don't want to say bad. Okay, first of all, it's really well done. You know, Lin's a genius at musicals. Yep. You know what I'm saying? So he's. He's writing music. He's writing raps. He's, you know, he's in it a little bit. Like, he definitely captured the tone of the neighborhood perfectly. You know, obviously a lot of familiar sights in the movie. I didn't know anything about the play or anything, so I didn't know the story arc. So I enjoyed that because it was all fresh and new to me. The only thing that threw me. Is, and maybe I'm wrong, and you know, either you know, you or other people correct me if I'm wrong. I was just a little thrown at the level of Puerto Ricans.
Well, that's been the argument about.
Because I'm like, there's no Puerto Ricans up here.
I know there was only one Puerto Rican in the story, though. There was just a couple Puerto Ricans in the cast.
Yeah, in the cast, the same people wearing the Puerto Rican shirts. And I'm like, right. that's not. That doesn't happen up here.
That was my issue with not issue. I don't want to call it an issue.
Yeah, it's not deep. It doesn't fuck the movie up.
There were mostly Puerto Ricans who were cast in the Dominican role, so that's the first
part. Yes, including Anthony Ramos.
Including Anthony Ramos. But that has been an issue since the Broadway iteration of the musical.
Because
Lin himself is Puerto Rican, and he wrote a Dominican story. So Lin himself is a Puerto Rican who played a Dominican. And the original, and I think the reason Lin wrote it a Dominican story is because he wanted to write a love letter to the Heights, but you can't write a Puerto Rican story that's a love letter to the Heights. It's a Dominican area. But I think also Lin wanted it to be a Boricua story, period, like a Afro-Latina story, period, right? Or a Latinx. I'm going to say it wrong, but you know, incorporate.
Yeah, you want to incorporate all the diaspora.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. So, like, and there's a scene, the carnival scene, the carnival de barrio,
mm-hmm.
Which I think is probably what you're talking about, where you know there's people representing Colombia and Cuba,
mm-hmm.
and I'm like, all them niggas ain't up here.
They're not like here,
that,
bro.
Right? Although I will say that in my building we have some West Indians, we have a couple of Cubans, we have, but the Heights is mostly Dominican. So there was the one Puerto Rican girl, although I don't think it was emphasized enough that as a Puerto Rican, she was kind of like an outsider.
Yeah.
And she is ironic. All the Dominicans played by Puerto Rican. She's played by a Mexican, but whatever. And then there's the guy, Benny, who was played by the actor who played Dre.
Yeah, Dre.
Is supposed to be black. I never got that. I thought
is he supposed to be black or is he actually Dominican?
Yeah, I thought he was supposed to be Dominican because Corey looks Dominican. But
yeah, he does.
He's supposed to be black. And there's a storyline where the girl's dad, Jimmy Smith's character, doesn't fuck with him because he's black. And they took that out. I think that Lin was trying to keep it very like... just pro-Latinx.
Yeah.
Yeah. And but I think that some nuance got lost in doing that.
Yeah, because that was the main thing, again, you know, and I know for anybody who, you know, doesn't live in this area, me and I do, but for people who don't live in this area, or especially people from out of for other parts of the country, this won't matter. Like, but right. To us, because we live in the area, like literally, like walk past that corner. You know what I'm saying? Like,
right. Like
the steps that they remember when she saw your man with them. That's the steps up here
at 181st Street. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it's right up here. So like, I'm like, I being in this all the time, I'm like, no, that's not real. There's no Puerto Ricans up here like that. Everybody is Dominican.
You know, everybody is Dominican.
And if you want Puerto Ricans on the east side of Harlem, everybody is Puerto Rican, like, and it's probably parts of the Bronx too. Like, so there's areas where that's real. It's just not this area,
right? And I, you know, even before the casting conversation hit the timeline, when I was walking away from the screening, me and my friend and a friend of Jeff's, Allison, we were walking back, mm-hmm. and I was like, you know, we mentioned that because I've lived in the Heights for 10 years. For those who don't know, but I'm a guest here. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Like, this is not. This is my neighborhood, but is not where I'm from.
We're guests.
Yeah. I'm a guest. I can claim High Bridge in the Bronx. I can claim Harlem. Those are two places I'm actually from, mm-hmm. right? My family is from. We have homesteads. That's where I grew up. Those are my streets. I am a guest here. So, but I definitely was like, my neighborhood is browner than this. Like, to the point where
way browner.
People speak to me in Spanish first.
I'm getting that all the time now. Like, I'm getting that consistently now.
All the
now.
Time. Because they, yeah. assume that I'm Dominican.
Yeah.
And they're shocked that I'm not. Right.
Yeah. So, I'm getting that more and more too. Like, people are like,
I can see
talking,
that.
Yeah. I'm talking in Spanish. Like, these delivery dudes, they was like, and it was like, no español. And I'm like, nah, man. And it was like, and I made out the one that the dude said, da-da-da. he looks Dominican.
Yeah,
like he said, and I was like, "Nah, I'm not."
I have to tell the hair salon people, the bodega people, the mm-hmm. damn cab drivers all the time. Like, I'm black. Yeah. I'm just black, right?
I will say this though. Living in Harlem for ever, right? And now here, living here, I like it up here better.
Yeah,
and I love Harlem. Like, I love Harlem. And I love it. To the core.
Well, you live on the quiet side of the Heights.
That too, but I just love this. I just love the energy up here. Like I said, I'll, you know, they'll probably spread my ashes on Harlem. Like, it's no.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? But like, I don't know. I just like the energy up here is just, I don't know. I really enjoy this neighborhood just overall. Because, you know, I still go out to everything. I get my hair cut up here. My man Marcos. I told you a little story. I got my hair cut on Saturday morning. And, you know, Marcos had a couple people, so I sat outside because it was hot that Saturday. Yeah. So I sat outside, you know, just to catch the air. And cat next to me, he's a blah, blah, blah. Thought I was Dominican.
Right.
And I was like, you know, Espanol? I'm like, nah, man. And he said, I could tell what he was saying, though. He said, blah, 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 loco. He was saying, women are crazy. He had a beef with his girl. That's why
he could interpret that.
He wanted to talk to me about it. That's why he was asking. And I was like, yeah, man, they kind of crazy guy. And then, but the rest of the time, me and him was just watching the gals walk by and kicking it without even speaking to each other. It was just
You like it up here because this is an old nigga haven. Like, old Dominican men run the streets of the Heights.
This is true.
They sit outside all day long. They play dominoes.
Drink beer.
Listen to music, talk shit. Like, they run the Heights. And so I have a love-hate relationship with the Heights in the summertime.
Yeah, because you're a woman, because you get harassed.
Well, not even just that. I live on, my windows face Amsterdam Avenue is fucking loud.
Oh, yeah.
It's loud.
Yeah.
These motherfuckers stay outside. And that's the one part, like, what I will tell you, the representation of the neighborhood, aside from the visible representation
in the movie,
people, the energy of the neighborhood is spot on. I live a block over from High Bridge Pool. That pool is that
lit.
Crowded all the fucking time, which is why lit. I do not go there. It is exactly like that.
Mm-hmm.
Whole fucking block
mm-hmm.
be out there. That whole park, full. All day, every day,
sun up,
sundown.
The motorcycles, the motor scooters, up and
these
down
niggas be out there playing bingo. When they were playing bingo at the Abuelos apartment, I was like, "What is it with them and bingo?" They be playing bingo out the park, like it's all
dominoes,
all
yeah.
of it.
Yeah, no, he nailed it. I mean, because he grew up here, so he nailed it. Like I said, yeah. It was just the Puerto Rican thing that threw me. But overall, I definitely enjoyed the movie, and I liked, I mean, I guess, spoiler alert at this point. Again, because I didn't know the story, I didn't see the twist at the end that he didn't leave. You know what I'm saying? I thought he was on the beach the whole time, and he was in the store with the paint. And I was like, well, that was dope, because I really thought he was gone.
I love that. I also just love, like you said, it was really well shot. We don't see the heights in movies, and you definitely don't see the heights in a framing that, you know, there was no violence, there were no robberies.
No.
There was no, Lynn mentioned that he was trying to get hookah in there, but just the presence of a hookah would have made it a NC-17, and they didn't want to do that.
Really?
Just putting it on screen, even if it wasn't lit.
Really?
An NC-17 rating. Yeah, he said, because they wanted to keep it a family movie.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
So you could even argue that it was a little too shiny of a representation of the heights, because the Black boys are definitely around my way. Like, the niggas is definitely outside.
Yeah.
But I also appreciated that, because it's a really broad neighborhood. Like, the fact that you can go from, you know, we're really close to both the east and the west side.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things I really loved about the way it was shot was like those peaks of the bridge being in the background all the time. I actually love that about living here, is that every once in a while I look up and catch the bridge. It's just like the right
mm-hmm.
angle.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really beautiful. Like, mm-hmm. it's a really gorgeous, like, I live in New York type.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, I literally walk past the bridge pretty much every day. At some point I walk past it. So yeah, so overall, like, if you haven't seen In the Heights, definitely check it out. You know, it's fun. Like I said, family entertainment. There's no cursing. There's no sex. There's no violence. It's just a kind of like a love story to the neighborhood and the community. What else do we want to talk about? Oh, I just want to mention Shikari.
Is it Shikari?
Shikari. Wait, no.
Shikari.
No. I think it's Shikari. Wait. Because it's a U there, isn't it? Is it Shikari?
No, there's no U.
It's not C-U, it's C-A?
Yeah.
Okay, Shikari. Okay, yeah, I want to... What's the last name again? Richardson.
I think so, yes, Richardson.
Yeah, Shikari Richardson, who, you know, she's her own person.
That girl.
No. That girl, and her own person, for sure, but she definitely has a Flo-Jo energy to her. Although she is definitely her own person.
Yeah.
She's 21 now, I believe, 20 or 21. She's from Dallas originally, ran track at LSU for 1 year, set all kind of collegiate records at LSU, and, you know, props to her, bounced. Like, I did my 1 year here, I knocked it down. I think, you know, her family needed, you know, some help financially, and so she turned pro against everybody's wishes except her team, everybody else around her. Of course, the LSU people like no, because she's making money for them, exactly. Yeah. And so she turned pro, and she's, you know, smoking it, doing extremely well. She's got all this style, and she's got that, you know, down south, like, you know, lace front, long lashes, it's like tattoos.
It's like if one of the city girls became attractive.
Word. It's like if JT, or one of the girls from Bella Noche became a track star.
It's very that, because she definitely. But honestly, you know what I love is that Carrie is the Black girl I saw running track. She is the Black girl who
running track. Yeah.
And that's why it's so funny to me that people kind of. That she's getting the criticism she's getting, because for me, though, that's what a black track girl looked like
mm-hmm,
to me. Mm-hmm. All the time, even at my bougie ass fucking suburban high school, those are what the Black track girls look like, and they would fuck you up. Also,
she'll whoop your ass if you talk shit.
Whoop your fucking ass. You did not fuck with them. But she's definitely, like you said, getting, because she left after 1 year. You know, a lot, what she's been speaking on a lot is how people really tried to act like she didn't have the skill or the talent to compete globally, right? Like, yeah, you fast for college. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
like,
yeah,
you're fast for this area.
With your little college meets.
Yeah, with your little college, but you don't have what it takes to go the distance. Yeah. And her mother So what happened yesterday? She qualified, right? Is that what it was?
Yesterday, I think she qualified for the Olympics and, you know, and a record time. And she got all the swag because she's doing a damn near the Usain Bolt shit, which is like two-thirds maybe race. She's running away with it. And she starts pointing to the clock, like, look at the time that I'm setting. Which for people who don't run track or don't know, like, when you're running track, you're supposed to keep your form all the way through because you'll slow down. So for her to do that and that's crazy for her to do that and still burst through and set that and do the time that she did was amazing, was incredible. And then I noticed, and I don't know if this was just her in the zone or whatever, when she won, she didn't shake nobody's hand.
She went to her grandmother.
Talked to them, and there was even a track guy, one of the officials, a black guy too, who stuck his hand out to shake her hand. She didn't touch that nigga.
Her mother died last week.
Yes. Her biological mother. She was in the zone.
I think her grandmother raised her because she made a point of saying my biological.
Yeah. Her grandmother raised her.
She was making a beeline. I also think the way she collapsed in her grandmother's arms, I think she was holding back tears.
Yeah, she let it all. She let it all out.
She was like, I gotta get to grandma. So she was. Focus, like,
yeah, because she even walked past the other relative, the auntie that was next to grandma.
Yeah, she walked past everybody.
Yeah. So she's awesome. And again, for those who don't track, the world record holder is a Jamaican woman named Shelly-Ann Fraser, who's been kicking ass for years. I think this will be her third Olympics, I think. And Shelly-Ann just set a record maybe a couple months ago. So the race in the Olympics, if they both qualify, which I'm sure they will be Sha'Carri versus Shelly-Ann. Like, that's going to be the race for the ages. Because Shelly-Ann is older. She's 34, but no disrespect, but she's Jamaican. So she's giving you all that lace front. She's giving you all that. And she's giving you all that, too. Like, you're getting all that. They both going to come out with some old hair, nails, thingy. you know what I'm saying? And they're going to go for it. So
some fly-ass tracks, too.
Yeah, the sneakers with some pictures on them or some shit like that.
So Inka just jumped on. Inka.
Hey, Inka.
Hey. I like to be here for the Black Girl Magic portion of the program.
Yeah. And that was the other thing I was going to say, like you were saying, Nye, like a lot of people have given Sha'Carri grief about her decision or whatever, but I'm noticing more and more online anyway, there's definitely a groundswell of Black people, especially Black women, who are basically like, yo, leave her the fuck alone. Like, we got her. Like, she's ours. Like you said, she's our Black girl. She's that girl. And she's got heavy backing in the Black community. Like, they like, nah, y'all not gonna be talking about Sha'Carri like that, not with me here. So I'm looking forward to that, to the Olympics.
And peace to Allyson Felix on her Olympic appearance. Five times. That's five.
And she had a baby.
Yeah. And she's back with Nike.
Oh, she's back with Nike?
Yeah, Nike on in the qualifying race.
Oh, okay.
Nike like abandon her when she
Yeah, they dropped her. Yeah.
Fucked up.
I hope she made them pay for what they did to the Cold Crush. Bruh, you want to talk about the cooking show on the Netflix? Was it fried big nigga eating fried foods?
Fresh, fried, and crispy.
Fat nigga eating fried foods all over the country.
Fat nigga with tartar sauce in his beard.
I don't even know buddy's name, but apparently
his name is. I'm gonna look it up. Someone the D.
Yeah, but apparently. So there's a show on Netflix. It's literally called Fried and Crispy. Mm. So
fresh fried and crispy.
So basically, this is a man who is eating everything is fried.
Everything.
And they have this little, they actually have a cool little tool that the show uses, which is it tells you what they're eating. And the food sort of drops into the oil and it's, you know what I mean? It does all of that sort of thing, which is kind of like their thing, clearly, the producers came up with. But listen, all in all, it wasn't a great show.
Yeah, I didn't think
so. God bless him. And let me preface this by saying I've learned to understand that I don't have to like something and I can still be happy for the people involved.
Exactly.
I'm happy that he, you know, used his internet celebrity to push this into a television show that'll probably, it looks very easily made. Mm-hmm. I would highly expect this to run a couple seasons. They probably have a bunch of shows in the bag already.
Yep.
But he is, unlike most cooking shows where you are talking to people who have either they're trained chefs or they're mm-hmm. experienced cooks.
Yeah.
Because there's a difference obviously with those two, right? But there's some cooking food preparation sort of background that people are speaking from.
Yeah.
And he didn't have any of that.
No, he's just a big nigga like who just likes to eat.
And his shtick is very, it's a little over the top for me. It's a little over the top for me, but I think it's on brand with what we expect big black men
to behave type of like.
For that guy, it's very on brand. Because you know that guy. We've all seen
that
guy.
You hear him before you see him when he walking up the driveway to come to the backyard to cook it. There you go.
For the listeners, the host is Dame, the guy who's in the Burger King commercial, who's in the drive-thru, that's excited he's getting the second Whopper or whatever.
Commercial. I'm about to leave before y'all take it back. I get two for one.
Yeah.
He's that nigga. As soon as they get out the car, you hear him talking shit. And, mm-hmm. You know, and he's like Sean says, like, oh, this nigga Dame here.
I'm watching this show and he's not... Like, okay, so we're dealing with two extremes with our last two cooking shows, right? Our first cooking show was, my man was just very prim and poised, and he spoke in this very, you know, it's like, nigga, like, show a little bit of excitement, like something. And then we go from that to this nigga, oh my God, these fresh tomatoes.
Oh my God, I don't eat
no meat. Is that a hand pie?
Nigga, I don't salad. I ain't eating no vegetables.
I found that a little bit disrespectful. Like, if I'm a chef and I'm making you a thing on a food show, and part of the experience of my sandwich is the lettuce and tomato or the whatever arugula
garnish.
Before you take a bite, grab the lettuce and tomato and throw it to the side. I was like, bruh, you need a little bit of lettuce and tomato on a sandwich. Like,
yeah, because guess what? Probably not going to hurt you, my nigga.
Nigga, you're probably not
going to hurt you.
You're smooth 360, 370. You can use
easy,
the salad.
Easy.
On a good day, nigga.
On a good day.
On a day where you've been in the steam room.
Word. Because he's tall, too. He's like 6'7". Yeah,
he's a big dude. Again, you know, God bless them. I wish them well.
Yeah.
Again, it's a great little show. What I do find very interesting is that these shows are more focused on mom and pop establishments, which I think is really cool. And I think that there's some pretty, pretty cool things. I couldn't watch all of the episodes with him. I just can't. He's like a fork on a chalkboard to me at a certain point. Again, I do say that, literally, this is not no shade. God bless him. Yeah. I wish him well.
Yeah, we're happy for him. Hope all the restaurants get the shine.
I don't know how you go
to Baltimore and don't find a single black person cooking, but
nigga,
not my ministry.
I'm like, nigga, like you went to Baltimore, you should have went to this Lake Trout and all that type. Like, nigga, you're going to do it, then do it. What are we doing here?
Not a steam fried crab shrimp to be found.
Yeah, come on. God bless that nigga. But he definitely was irking my nerves. But he really irked my nerves when he went to the black woman in St. Louis who's a vegan. And he's shitting on her, like you said, before he even had a bite. Now, I don't know about this. I'm like, oh, come on.
Her food ended up winning the show. So
was the best one, exactly. Never. So whatever, nigga.
God bless
that nigga, man. I just want to mention real quick, because we missed last week. I want to just mention, Nye, did you see the Hacks finale?
No, I did not. I did not watch last week. I literally know nothing that happened in the world.
He was moving around.
Because I was fucking buried.
Yeah. Hacks finale was really good. Really good. Obviously set up for another season. I think they got picked up as well. But just really good, really well done great. It's a great show, man. Like I said, for those who haven't watched it, it's worth the watch. It's really, really good. Now you want to talk about your Black music trip first, or you want me to do mine first?
So there were two big Black music moments this weekend past, I guess, both scheduled for such.
The same day, same weekend.
Yeah, because it was Juneteenth weekend and also Black June being Black Music Month. But the National African American Museum, the National Museum of African American Music, opened in Nashville officially over the weekend. And this is a project that's been in the works for years. It's a wonderful museum. I mean, it's state of the art. Yeah, it's state of the art. It's really well done. And, you know, we do, you know, there is a really great music and entertainment exhibit in the NAM, in the Blacksonian, as we call it, in D.C. But this is an entire museum that's just dedicated to African-American music. And it follows a timeline, the exhibits do. And it literally starts at middle the beginning. Passage.
Oh, really?
It really starts in, like, the things we brought over from Africa in terms of sonics and sounds and, you know, going into spirituals and folk music and going on from there, which I think is important.
Do they talk about, do they cover, because this is a period that was just lost, is ragtime.
Yeah, there's the ragtime segment. So they have a little bit of everything. And I'll be honest, I didn't get to explore the museum thoroughly the way I wanted to, so I'm gonna have to make a trip back to Nashville for that. But it was good to see some folks, a lot of the New York folks down there. Like, I saw Bevy and her sister Stephanie, Bevy Smith, who's friend to the show. Obviously she was doing some panels down there. I saw Whitney is on. They have a board of directors, and then they have another kind of a representative board who's like industry executives and stuff like that. And Whitney sits on that. I want to give a shout out to my friend Tuisha Rogers, who used to work at E1, who is now their vice president of brand partnership. She put a lot of stuff together for this weekend. And Deanna Williams, who's old school, like, journalist, well respected. She's like the auntie of Black music, and she was there. So it was a good, I wasn't there for the full weekend of activity. There had been a gala on Thursday night that was celebrating, like, Bobby Brown, Chaka Khan, and I think, like, Jimmy Jam and Terry Lewis.
Yeah, I saw Jimmy and Terry, rather, pictures.
I met Jimmy on Friday, which was, like, the highlight of my year, because
they're really nice guys, too.
He's so kind, and he knew who I was. Like, he follows me, but I was ready to explain, like, you follow me on, you know, whatever. But he, like, stood up, he gave me a hug, we talked, he was like, let's take a picture, you know, like, just really kind, really accessible.
Yeah, Jimmy, I've never met Terry, but I've met Jimmy a couple of times. I mean, like, I don't know him, but he's a really nice guy. And you'd be like, nigga, you're Jimmy Jam, like, why?
You're fucking Jimmy Jam. Like,
yeah, and he'd be like really nice to you, and you'd be like, nigga, you're fucking Jimmy Jam.
Like, I was literally like, I can't even just... And I had to first tell him, like, I have known Jimmy and Terry's music probably well longer than I've known almost any other, like, producer team. Because my dad went through this phase around, like, the Alexander O'Neill and Sherelle era, where he just played Control, SOS Band, you know, the Sherelle album, and Alexander O'Neill, just played them all on a loop. And, like, around, like, 85, whenever that was.
Yeah, that's about right.
And it always stood out to me because my dad didn't really do contemporary R&B like that. And it was much later that I realized he was listening to Jimmy and Terry.
He was the production.
It wasn't about I think Rabia had put him on to Control. And my dad was like, you know, audiophile. So he's looking at the liner notes, and he started just listening to all
stuff that Jimmy and
Terry stuff. And it took him out. I was like, oh shit, he was listening. It wasn't that he was fans of the artist; he was listening to Jimmy and Terry. So I've known their music forever, but I was also telling Jimmy that I have such respect for him because he's a dynamic storyteller. He tells the best stories about stuff. They screened Mary's No More Drama doc on Friday. It's really good. Really good, and really, like,
Now it's called My Life, right?
I mean, My Life. I'm sorry.
So is
My
it
Life.
About the making of the
it's
album?
About, yeah, it's about that era. It's about that era, but framed in the context of you know, Mary's childhood and stuff. Oh, cool. But the My Life album was like that point where she pivoted to like superstar, like on her way to superstar status.
Yeah, her and best album, like, in my opinion.
Best album, and still, I've mentioned that I think for my generation, I was in college when it came out, but I think for Gen Xers who are still young, that was our first like adult album that somebody our age made, right? Like we might have listened to some adult,
like Anita Baker and stuff, but that was, but like, that was like the Anita Baker album, like rapture for the younger generation.
Exactly. Like it was like adult situations, like real shit, but recorded for us by somebody our age. Like Mary was 23, 22, some shit like that.
About that. Yeah.
But she was also like heavily depressed, suicidal even.
On drugs.
At the on drugs, you know, drinking at the time of making that album. So now standing back, you know, she's going back and examining it in a really real way. So, you know, she's talking about it. There's they talk about her and Casey. Chucky's in it. Big Bub is in it. You know, there's a lot of Puff. And there's a lot of Dre. And she dedicates the movie to Dre at the end, and that's when I just lost it.
That's when you cried.
Yeah, I just broke down. But there was a couple of moments in there when I broke down. I think it's really good. It's Mary as a person who's been through some shit. Yeah. And then look back, you know,
at work. Shit. But,
yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
Is this coming on streaming?
It's on
Amazon Prime. Oh, but I said that to say that Jimmy was even telling a story of, because he was talking about Mary, because him and Terry did the No More Drama album.
Yeah, and I think they worked on Share My World too.
They did some Share My World stuff too. Mm-hmm. He was talking about Mary's Grammy rehearsal for No More Drama and how like everybody was just like, that was, you know, like a moment. But again, I say that to say he was telling stories, sharing information, just really generous of himself. Mm-hmm.
He's great.
You know, way that like a person that level really doesn't have to be.
Yeah, Jimmy's a great, he's a great dude, man. He's a great dude. And I'm loving like, you know, this kind of music moments that are popping them out over because it's Black Music Month. Obviously, I'm going to talk about me and Sean but also there's a Rick James doc that was screened at Tribeca that's coming out.
Yeah, I'm excited to see that.
People I know have seen it said it was, I think Jerry Barrow saw it. He went to the screen. He says the shit's ridiculous. Like he said, it's unbelievable. And I feel like there's something, I saw some other kind of documentary or something coming. But yeah, but I love these kind of moments that we're having. So Sean and I were in Atlanta same weekend, last weekend, for the Black Music and...
That's the Black Music, Black African-American Black Music Walk of Fame?
Yeah, Black Music and Entertainment Walk of Fame.
Entertainment, yeah.
Yeah, Walk of Fame in Atlanta. So they basically making like the Hollywood Walk of Fame with stars outside of the... how past is Shirley said, bro?
The Mercury D's Arena.
In Atlanta.
Mercury D.
She killed me when she said that. So it was a lot of inductees this year. Some made it, some didn't. Some sent video.
They did two. They did they did basically a almost like a Ring of Honor.
Yes.
The sort of established artists, the James Browns, the Otis Redding. So, you know, there was that ring, and then they did like an inaugural class.
Yes, exactly. So I'm going to try to remember everybody who was in the class. Missy Elliott, Kirk Franklin, Shirley Caesar.
And Beyonce too, right?
Beyonce, Michael Jackson, Stevie Wonder, Quincy Jones is on the older side. Usher, Outkast, Dallas Austin. Jermaine was
there in like a fucking t-shirt, and I was
Jermaine
had him, on his way back from the studio or something.
He had some t-shirt on and some dunks and like he dunks. You know, but I mean that's Jermaine, man. What are you gonna do? But it was really.
I cool. know how to put a suit on.
No, I know. But it was really cool because.
Especially for his damn daddy, by the way.
I know, I know. But it was really
Michael
cool
Malden, because... who was behind the association who put this together. Was
yeah, yeah, yeah. Him and Demet Gidry. It was really interesting because what they would do was they would have like Jermaine inducted Dallas, like so they would kind of like have the person the person next, and obviously those two guys are very close, and so on and so on and so on. So they did that a few times, which was really cool. And you know, people kind of get up and talk, and I didn't know that Jermaine is very close. He said Otis Redding's son was the first person to give him a shot. So Michael and Jermaine would drive down to Macon when Jermaine was a kid, and Otis Redding's son, I think it was Otis the Third, I believe his name is.
Oh, wow.
He was like, he's like, yo, like, okay, I think you got some talent. So Jermaine was like, my first productions were with them, and they're like my family, which was, I didn't know that Otis
Redding. I think he also used to do some stuff with Bell, with Kooling the Gangs.
That's possible too. Yeah, so he talked about that, and then Dallas talked. You know, everybody kind of had their stories and stuff. But you know, Missy got very emotional, as she always does, and she got her award, and you know, talked about how you know, she loves that the Black community has always kind of supported her no matter what. And, you know, even when she was ill, like everybody was around her. And then Marlon Jackson got up there. Bray, you want to talk about Marlon?
Yo, look, man, Marlon Jackson. First of all, I y'all niggas know I love an old Black nigga. Y'all know my affection for, so you know I love the Jacksons. Cause them, yeah. It's them niggas, they might have left Gary, but Gary ain't leaving them.
Right.
Gary
ain't leaving them. They're some old Midwest ass niggas.
Yo, Marlon got up there, and God bless him, he did have a health scare. He actually had a heart attack recently.
Like, really recently, like 2 weeks ago.
Yes, like, yeah, he was like, I just got out of the hospital like a few days ago.
Yeah.
So he was really, it was a testimony, and it was very, I'm with my people. That it definitely felt like he would not have said that in mixed company.
No.
That
no,
would have not
no,
been
no.
his spiel no. with... other
no.
folks around.
No.
But he got up there and, you know, he started talking, and you can tell he sounded a little winded. He sounded like a man who had just, you know, come from the hospital.
Yeah.
But, you know, the things he was talking about were, you know, they were really important. And then he did what is quintessential old Black nigga, which was, before I let you go, let me say one more thing. And he did that shit. No lie, no bullshit. Marlon had to do that about 3 times, Jeff.
I was going to say 5.
Yeah, about 3 or 4 times. Like, right when you got to the cusp of thinking he's about to wrap it up, boom, he hit you with something else.
I'm going to say this one more thing before I let y'all go now.
But
it's
it was all gems, though.
Yeah.
And peace to him for keeping the Gators alive. My nigga had on some clean Black Gators.
Yeah, he did.
Some loafers.
Had his shades on.
Yeah, you know? God bless him, man.
But it was, I thought it was, you know, it was a good day. It was, you know, a lot of Black music execs from Atlanta were there, like Shaka, and, you know, Tubby was there, and, you know, on and on, Sean Garrett. So I thought I had a good time. I mean, I was there with my bro anyway, so I was Gucci regardless. But I had a good time. And then just one more thing, then Pastor Shirley Caesar, who was inducted as well, like she got up there, and dude, she like, it went 0 to 1,000 in 3 seconds. Hey, Ivy. Like, she, it was, like, Pastor Shirley, I've never seen her, air quotes, perform, because I don't know what she does.
There's a performance. Listen, when Pastor Caesar steps in the room, the Spirit of God
is walking with her.
Right there.
Yeah.
Ministering.
Ministering from the gate. You could feel it. As soon as she hit the stage, it was electricity. Like,
we went from... I said we went from regular brunch, looking at our watches, kind of figuring out how we was going to exit out of here. And then we looked up, and we was in second service in the Baptist church. Like, I mean, 0 to church in no time flat. It was the most fascinating thing.
It was amazing.
And God bless, she had her team of folks with her.
Yeah.
And I don't necessarily know if she meant to try to perform, but apparently... she had her piano player. Her,
I don't even know when.
That sometimes you just got to travel with a musician. You just
I don't even know when to put the piano up on the stage.
The service might break out. So it just might happen.
He appears from thin air.
Literally.
So he goes on stage, right? And then boom, you can tell that the band, so there was a live band.
It was live band there.
Trap Jazz was
the name. Trap Jazz.
Really good musicians. Mm-hmm. And you can tell the moment she gets on, you can tell these are church boys. Like you can tell they
know what to look for.
They fall into line. They're clearly paying attention to her. And they start playing. Mm-hmm. And then the people crowd around the stage, right? And then boom, they spread open again. And now there's a piano player, her person, sitting down, just like I said, appears out of thin air. She probably went on for about maybe 20 minutes, bro. She sung her speech. That's how. She was just so in the spirit, and you can just tell, like you said, she is anointed. Yeah. There is something very powerful and very clear when she has that microphone and something that she feels required to do. It's done in an effortless way. And I promise you, everyone in there, if somebody would have tried to leave, I promise you they'd have put their finger up and walked to the bathroom. I promise you.
Yeah, like, is it okay?
Listen, that's ministry. The very first time, not to get off on a tangent about her, but the first time I ever got to be in a room with her, it was like she just had a light.
Electricity coming out of her.
And that's how you know there's some people who really do have God's hand on them and some people who just out there bullshitting. Because that woman,
that's real.
That is meant, like, she is ministering. She's not just singing. She there for a reason. She is there to share the good news and to edify God. And I love that you can tell, you can feel it. I feel the same way about Fantasia. That's why every song she sings, she gets to shout.
Them shoes gonna come off.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, no, so that it was a good time. And then just real quick, I know I've mentioned on here before, there's a church that I watch online from Atlanta, House of Hope. So I met Pastor Dewey. He was on my plane coming back home. I met him. I was like, oh man. So I kicked it with him for a hot minute. That was cool. And I saw LaToya from Real Housewives of Atlanta in the airport too. So that was my trip.
Did you introduce
yourself
to LaToya?
I just saw her walk past her. Oh, that was LaToya.
Did you guys see Melody Holt?
Yes. Oh, we saw Melody Holt, who looked like, what you expect, like she has that, like Russ said, she definitely has that reality look, right? But she also has like that very Southern, like, I'm a little spicy, but not all the way spicy. Like she had the short skirt, but it wasn't short. It's kind of like,
I could wear this to church and this event that we go.
I could wear this probably to like a churchish event. I don't know if you
wear it. Yeah, she ain't putting that on in sanctuary. She won't put that on in sanctuary.
No.
Maybe to the fellowship hall.
Yes.
Maybe down to the fellowship hall.
Yes.
Into the sanctuary, though.
Yeah. So we saw Melody Holt. I didn't see no more reality stars while I was down there this time. But they all down there. Like, you're falling out of trees down there. You never knew who you're going to bump into. But it was a good trip. I want to also mention, I want to talk about this T-Pain thing a little bit. So I guess a show, I don't know where it's coming on. I don't know what network it's called, Pop. And I guess they're interviewing different artists about music and stuff. And so a clip came out where they interviewed T-Pain, and in his clip, he said that he was depressed for a while because he was on a plane with Usher. And they had a conversation. Usher told him, you kind of ruined the music by introducing autotune to music. And he said that really like hurt him to his core and like put him into a depression. And this, sparked some conversations online, so on and so on. So I'm gonna say my little piece and then I'm gonna let y'all go. Now I'm coming from a little different because Usher and T-Pain were on Jive.
Yes.
Yeah, they were both on Jive, so like I was kind of seeing more behind the scenes stuff, and I've always felt like we're not going to talk about like T-Pain's talent and all that. We know what he's talented. That's not the issue here. I've always felt like, and it's not just T-Pain who's this happened to, like other artists have talked about it, even Drake, like who's the biggest artist now, just kind of a consortium of niggas in the music business. And if you're not part of that consortium, they will try to, and you become very successful, a lot of them will try to cut you down. Or either they suck you in or they cut you down. They tried to do it with Wayne. They tried to do it with Drake. They tried to do it with some others where like either you're part of this circle or if not, we're going to kind of like try to get you about out the fucking paint. And I think that one of the things that bothered people about T-Pain was he wasn't part of that because he was part of no consortium. This nigga from Tallahassee. He blew up. He invented a particular sound. He didn't invent auto-tune, but he invented a particular sound that exploded as well and became overwhelmingly popular in that era. And I think it got to the point where them niggas was like, yo, we got to get him the fuck out of here. And so Jay-Z comes out with Death of an Auto-Tune. You know, T-Pain came out with a story that Kanye clowned him after he gave Kanye fucking Good Life.
Right.
One of Kanye's biggest records ever. And then Kanye clowned him. You saw DJ Khaled stop working with him. You saw some things happen and it was, and I don't think these were organic things. I think there was a plan made to get this nigga out the paint. And I feel like Usher might have also been part of that plan. Like, yo, like we not fuck with you. And the thing, let me just say something. The thing that bothers me about the Usher thing is, nigga, you say he hurt music by doing auto-tune, and then nigga, Usher did auto-tune on Oh My God and DJ Save My Life. Like, nigga, what are you talking about? You're two of your biggest records ever, you used auto-tune on. So nigga, if you felt that strong about it, say it with your chest and don't use auto-tune. Don't shit on this nigga and then use the thing that you shitted on this nigga for your benefit. That's what really bothered me about the Usher thing. He can have his opinion, but then nigga, then don't backslide and then do use the shit that you shitted on this man for. So again, and I'm different because I'm coming from the inside out, but I'm gonna let y'all talk now.
So I think I don't know that it was so much of a plan as motherfuckers, even artists in the industry follow the leader, right? So I think there came a point where it became popular to not fuck with Pain. Like, and I think Jay had a lot to do with that. So
that
like,
record, that Death of an Auto-Tune record had a lot
right,
to do with
it. It's kind
of
like a big homie said it. So, oh, now
exactly.
we can't fuck. And I don't think it was so much like niggas sat down and was like, okay, we getting this nigga out of here. But it was like, oh, Jay don't fuck with him? Oh, so okay, let me not fuck with him either. And it's peer pressure. And the music industry is fucking high school on the executive side.
Absolutely.
And on the artist side. Niggas follow cliques. They follow what certain people say is cool. They let it influence their opinion. And Pain's moment, and I will say those years between like 08 to like 2001 were really weird in terms of music because there was a lot of shit that changed like very fast. Like
snap music, crook music, T-Pain shit.
We talked a couple of months ago, I think, about how Bow's career was just over. Bow Wow's career was just like, it's just like one day it was just a wrap, right? Mm-hmm. After this nigga was doing platinum over platinum over platinum over platinum. And the same thing with Pain, like Pain shit just came to a halt, right? And he was very young too. So I think that, so he very was very young. Young. He got a lot of money really fast and a whole deal very fast. Like it was a whole movement that came very quickly because Dream was doing the same shit Pain was doing also,
but,
right?
But what's the difference? Dream right, been down with Rockefeller
Dream,
from
right,
the door.
Dream been down.
So he's in the in right. click.
So the other thing with Pain though is like, I feel like we put too much on Pain doing auto-tune because Pain's version of auto-tune was more like the vocoder shit that Roger and Teddy used to do because Pain could sing. Yeah. So he was doing it more for effect than he was doing for tune. And now there are niggas who do it because they literally can't.
They can't sing.
Sing, right? Mm-hmm. So now, in retrospect, because I'll be honest, I was a casual Pain fan. Like, I would listen to it. I didn't buy the shit. But I would listen to it. I would jam to it in the club. Mm-hmm. I've been very surprised if you go back and play T-Pain's music now, it held up really well, and it's because the nigga is a good fucking producer.
He's really talented.
Yeah, he's very talented. The musicality is there. And I do think he is owed an apology because people made it seem like Pain was about a gimmick, and that was just one element of what he was doing. That wasn't
He's a great songwriter.
Great songwriter, like the great producer. And again, he can sing. So if you take that shit away, but I don't know that people, you know, he did a Tiny Desk concert a while ago and everybody was like, oh shit.
Is so T-Pain a church kid?
I'm not sure.
So, I wouldn't be surprised though.
I think his father's actually Muslim. I don't think he's a church kid. I don't think so. Don't quote me on that, but
I wouldn't be surprised if it was. So yes, but Payne has tweeted almost since, like, I guess right before we got on air, that he wants people to lay off Usher. He wasn't trying to get at Usher. It was one of many things that was hitting him at the same time.
Yeah.
But the thing is that, you know, he fucked with Usher. So it comes from Usher. Really, really hurt. Do I think there were a whole bunch of copycats after T-Pain?
Absolutely. Who
didn't really pour, you know, effort at the auto-tune shit that kind of fucked us up for a minute? 100%. But do I blame Pain for that? No, I blame the fact that the industry likes to chase whatever is hot at the moment.
And that was my argument to a couple of niggas today on Twitter. It's like, don't blame Pain. Like, he created this thing. Now, if people came behind him that were lazy and uncreative, that's not his fault. That's not his fault. Like, he didn't tell them to do that. They did that on their own. So don't blame him because they did whack. Like, you know, there's always been copycats. There's a whole bunch of people who try to do Prince's sound when Prince popped off. A whole bunch of people. Some did it okay. Some didn't do it okay. Obviously, nobody did it as well as him. But it ain't Prince's fault that everybody tried to do the Minneapolis sound when it came out. That's just what, there was a whole lot of people that tried to do the Jackson 5. And on and on and on. This happens in music. Like, but you can't blame them. You know what I mean? So, I don't know. Inca, bro, you got something about this?
I think that I understood what I think Usher was trying to say. And I don't think that it was as big a shot to T-Pain as much as people are making this one out to be.
Mm.
Like, I remember a coach once saying to us, Michael Jordan was like the worst thing to happen to basketball. And, you know, obviously at like 13, you don't understand what he's saying. But when he explained it, he was just like, well, you know, you guys don't really see all of the fundamentals and all of the efforts. You're only seeing the flash or the dunk. So you're not really seeing all of the other things that kind of go into this.
Mm.
I think Usher was really referring to all of the copycats, and kind of what happened was this influx of everyone using this sound and it really became not really unique to Pain. It wasn't his thing anymore.
Yeah.
Everybody had started to use it.
It blew up.
You know, and listen, is he talented? Sure. I don't think anybody ever really questions his talent. But, you know, this happens in music. People have runs. And sometimes your run is really, really short and powerful. And sometimes it's long. Sometimes you got a marathon. Sometimes you got a sprint.
Yeah.
I mean, what was me, my nigga? You had five number one records in 3 years. Woe is me. I mean, I'm just saying, like, let me say this. I'm not at all suggesting that his depression or what he was going through was insignificant or inconsequential. What I'm saying is that this idea of entitlement to a career that is going to last you 40 or 50 years is just not a very realistic thing,
right?
By and large, like, that is a very unique stance, right? Like, that's a very, very unique thing. That's not common, my nigga. Like, there are a ton of bands who from like 78 to like 89, nigga, was the shit.
Mm.
And guess what they do now? They retired. They got their publishing checks. What's my man, Callaway and Callaway?
Oh,
look at all the unsungs.
The Callaway brothers.
They do a couple of club dates.
Look at them unsungs, and you go see all the good teeth guys, all the guys with good shirts on. Okay,
but the ones get the publishing check.
They, you know what I'm saying? They doing all right. And I mean, I don't really know
Payne,
what else.
Payne is doing all he's doing. Well, financially. I mean, so I know what you're saying, though. Like you had your run.
I'm saying it sounded to me like he felt entitled to that spot.
I don't think I don't agree. I think what it is that he felt like his run was cut short by other people shitting on him. But
other people shitting on you doesn't. I say this all the time. And listen, I don't give a fuck what you talking about. A hit record's a hit record.
Okay.
A hit record's a hit record. Niggas been shitting on Drake, like you said, for a decade.
Right.
Yo, he's corny, he's whack, and then boom, another hit record. And then boom, another hit record.
Yeah.
And guess what?
I think what Drake has that the others don't have is, like, girls, like, Payne, part of
Payne never been sexy.
Part of the reason he was seen as a novelty item is because, you know, he's got the dreads, he's got the glasses, he's got the whatever. If Payne had been a sexy nigga, he could have made that pivot.
Also, are we going to talk about the fits? Are we going to ignore the fits?
No, he's a country ass nigga from Tallahassee, Florida.
That is part and parcel, my nigga. Like, I'm just, again, I'm.
He was like a ringmaster. He made ghetto musical remix.
He made music that was. That made its mark. Mm-hmm. And that is what I think, you know, there's nothing to sneeze at about that. He's made his mark. T-Pain hasn't put out a record in how long? And we're still talking about it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right? Yeah. Like he made his mark. And again, if he wants to make other music or he wants to go into other genres or he wants to do other things to express his creativity, like I totally understand that and I totally get that. I'm not saying he needs to go home and die. I'm not saying he needs to go home and like not ever make music
again. Curl up in a ball and shit.
Yeah. I'm just saying this idea that because I made a hit record 7 years ago means that the next record I make, I should be entitled to that same embracement is like, it's bullshit. It's bullshit. It doesn't work that way, my nigga. Like, I don't know what to tell you. I really don't.
All right. Inka, what you got before we move on?
I'm just interested to watch the whole thing. The series is called This Is Pop on Netflix. Yeah, This Is Pop, right?
Yeah.
And,
it's on Netflix.
It's on Netflix. Okay. And I think they modeled it after the hip hop evolution, just telling the story of pop.
Okay.
So I'm interested in just watching it.
I've seen how it goes.
Sorry, okay. Ivy has an ear infection.
No, nah, come on.
We get it, Ivy.
The podcast ain't right unless we get that Ivy. That Ivy.
Background vocal.
Yeah, background vocal. It should sound dry until we get that Ivy background vocal. Real quick, I just want to mention this TV show. I'm going to mention one TV show this week. Well, I actually mentioned Hacks, so this will be two. Well, actually, cook the cooking show, so this will be three. The Encore. The Encore is a show.
I'm not up on it yet.
Okay. I've heard about this show, and I've heard it's good and messy, but I haven't watched it.
It's messy as fuck. So it's on BT. BT got one. It's a show where they put... it's produced by Carlos
King. Now it's on BT proper, or it's on the BT stream?
No,
okay.
No, proper. It's produced by Carlos King and Ty Tucker.
Carlos is good for some messy R&B mess.
Great. Carlos is great for some messy whatever. You know what I'm saying? His shit always a mess. And so they've taken nine former R&B girl singers. So it's two girls from 702, Pam from Total, Keely from 3LW, the two twins from Cherish, Nivea, old girl that was on Real Housewives, Ronnie's wife, Shamari.
Shamari.
And Aubrey O'Day from Day 20, from, what's her name? Is it Day 26?
Day 26. No, that's the guys.
No, the girl. What's the girl's?
Wait, were the guys?
No, the guys Day 26. Danny Kane.
Them making the band people.
Yes. And they put them all in this house together and proceeds chaos, mess, drama, and they're supposed to be making a girl group with all nine of these women who are from vastly different places, vastly different personalities, vastly different levels of success, and it's a fucking mess, but it's, you can't really turn away.
So I saw like 15 minutes of it, and I just got smacked in the face with audacity by a few of the ladies.
Yeah, but, it's a lot of audacity. They should have called the show Audacity.
I heard the girls from Cherish are doing a lot of shit talking to have like
they're doing all the shit talking.
So much. And I mean, I think all they have on the other girls is that they might look like they held up a little better.
Well, the Cherish girls are actually fairly young. They're only like 32. Right. Because they were really young.
How old were they?
I think they were like teenagers. Jesus. They were like 15, 16 when Americans came out. So they're pretty young. I mean, that's one of the things. It's like, these girls, this is some aunties in here. We ain't messing with them. They all old and shit. Like, they're reckless, man. And then Keeley's doing
They said that about the people that they're on the show with?
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
I'm saying they're on.
I mean, I know what you're saying. They're on
the show with them.
Who was you?
They live
who
in the you house. With that,
like, I mean, what is we saying?
Yeah, we all equals, but not to them. They're like, we writing songs, and my sister's a millionaire now because she wrote some stuff.
Meanwhile, though, they might have written some songs. Y'all had one goddamn hit. Have to remember is not Sierra, by the way.
Yeah,
because I always think it's Sierra.
Yeah, Jazzy Faye produced it. I think he wrote it for Sierra.
And they kept it. What's that Sierra song? And it's not Sierra. It's so not bitches, Sierra. Don't even get credit for the fucking song that you have a hit for.
Yeah,
imagine disrespecting 702 like that. I don't understand.
And 702 was the ones who got it immediately, and then they go at Keeley too. But Keeley deserved it. It's a messy show.
Keeley is a fucking mess.
It's a messy ass show. You should watch it because it's a fucking mess. It's a mess. I wanted to just I'm gonna get into it now because we're out of time. But next week I want to get into it deeper. I'm very interested in watching this Dame Dash Rockefeller lawsuit. Dame is being sued by Rockefeller because
they just FYI.
They announced something.
The judge announced a stop. Basically, he halted Dame's we're trying to sell the NFT.
Oh,
and it's what I read was basically the judge was like, all right, everybody hold the fuck up.
Yeah, chill the fuck out.
Until we figure this shit out. That's what it sounded like.
Because it's such a new medium. I don't even know if there's kind of laws on the books for what Dame is trying to do. Because the NFTs are like brand spanking new. So he's selling his stake in Rockefeller as an NFT, which is very interesting. So I don't watch it because I'm very curious to see how they deal with this legally. I wanted to mention one more thing before we get into the last thing, but let me check the time first. I just wanted to mention Juneteenth becoming a national holiday. What's your thought about that?
Have issues. Let me tell you why I have issues.
This nigga woke right up.
Let me tell you why.
You see how quick that nigga woke up?
let me tell you why I have issues. Because I've seen some people who have been like, I don't know why y'all act like we can't do multiple things at the same time. And people like Miss Opal been fighting for this. I get all of that,
Not Miss Opal.
That's the name of the black woman who's been fighting.
Oh, is it?
She's in her 90s. Her name
Opal. How old?
She's been in her 90s. Matter of fact, she went to the White House. She went to the White House on Friday, I think. When Biden actually
with the grandbabies,
Here is my thing. The reason I have issue with Juneteenth being made a national holiday now, right now, is because half these white people shit. A lot of black people just found out what the fuck Juneteenth was last year, and B, because they about to Cinco de Mayo the fuck out of this shit. There is
make it like a party holiday.
Yeah, and it's coming at a time of convenience. Like, here, let's give y'all... Meanwhile, how are you literally going to... Like, the fact that it passed in the Senate immediately is enough for me to be like, nah, because how are you so readily ready for the country to acknowledge the state, you know, the date of the last enslaved people being made free while simultaneously passing laws for us to not teach critical race theory or anything from the 1619 curriculum in schools, right? The math don't math. The other thing is that I've never really felt strongly about Juneteenth itself being a national holiday only because Juneteenth is a symbolic date. States have their
own. It's some bullshit.
Many states have their own freedom celebrations. Juneteenth is significant to Texas.
Texas.
So I understand us all adopting it because none of us are free until all of us are free. I get that, right? But like, we may be able to focus on multiple things at the same time. We know that the Senate cannot. So that's my thing, right? Because now you got companies giving you Juneteenth off. They can't tell you why. People were talking about programming that was going on in their offices. Somebody's office did a whole fucking spirit week all week.
Somebody said they had a walkout in their office because the company served them fried chicken, watermelon, and shit like that for lunch.
Want to do soul food?
Top Golf had the collard greens and fried chicken and really? Watermelon.
Yeah, really? Like Ole Miss, University of Mississippi put out a Juneteenth Day message. Like, we are 1 year away from mattress sales and fucking Macy's white linen. That's my problem. My problem is that the holiday is not being acknowledged with full weight and depth and breadth. And it's a misdirect because the country still don't want to fucking talk about slavery.
Yeah, so I'm like, shit.
Yeah, so that's my issue.
What y'all think? What you think, Inca, bro? What y'all think?
I wasn't like
doing tripping.
I mean, I wasn't tripping. I mean, I wasn't blown away by it. I didn't feel like, oh my God, we's free now. You know what I mean? I didn't have that.
We has overcome.
Yeah, I didn't. You know, I didn't feel like that. I didn't think it was the worst thing ever either. I do want to say that there was an immediate, and I was, you know, just for transparency, I was a part of that contingent, which was like, hey, were we really asking for this? Because it seems like the civil rights legislation, the anti-lynching bill has been sitting on you guys' desk for over, about a year and a half now, mm-hmm, 2 years, mm-hmm, or something like that, just this run. So when people were saying no one was asking for this, this was not in any disrespect to Miss Opal. This was not in any disrespect to her fight and her cause. But I will also say, like, we can also acknowledge that this as a holiday was not some sort of national gathering. Like, we didn't come together on such a large scale.
We got to have this,
right? Like, yeah. You know, and so I understand, and I understand that there are mixed feelings about this. The only thing that I do want to say is I think that it is absolutely disingenuous to have a date like this, but also not acknowledge the fact that what that really means is that for 3 years, Texas still was stealing free fucking labor from black people who had no clue
that was slavery.
They
could just be out here free. Like, yeah. I mean, we're not even beginning to process that.
It's just not putting it in context.
We're making it seem like, you know, listen, I get that now we're in such an information age that everything in history seems like it was dated. Now, sure, it might have taken a while for word to reach back.
It didn't take 3 years.
You know, it didn't take, you know what I'm saying? Like, it didn't take 3 years, my guy. Like, this was clearly a plan. And I'm sure if you dug, and I'm nobody's historian, but I'm sure if you dug, you will see a clear, concise plan to keep this from black folks.
Absolutely.
To make sure that they stayed in bondage. So,
absolutely.
I mean, if that's not being reckoned with, if that's not being acknowledged, then then the date is kind of all for naught. You know what I'm saying? I mean, the spirit of it, I will say. I mean, but, you know, it's kind of uncomfortable, right? Like, white folks get that day off too. Fuck. I mean, that's just weird.
That's weird. Yeah.
My issue. Y'all shouldn't get to come to the cookout. This is inviting the rest of the country to the cookout. And I don't like it.
Right. That's my
pretty
thing.
Much.
Like, why do these motherfuckers? And also, what it's going to create is, once again, black people being asked, just like Black History Month, black people being asked to do all the work to do something in acknowledgement of Juneteenth. Like, we're going to have to be in charge of the programming. We're going to have to be in charge of the ideas. We're going to have to be in charge. Meanwhile, white people get another day to pretend allyship, basically.
Yeah, for one day. Last thing before we wrap up. I know this is your thing, but I want to, if she's into it, I'm gonna let Inca start this because I know she's a big TikTok head. So there is an interesting And I like the way you put it, Nye. It's like a sociological experiment. It's very interesting. So Megan Thee Stallion, well, I think the name of the damn record.
That shit.
So Megan Thee Stallion has a single out called That Shit. And, you know, it's about her doing That Shit, right? And the chorus is, I can't remember the chorus verbatim, but it's like, put your hands on your knees.
It's hands on my knees, shaking ass on my
That Shit. That Shit. Yes.
Very simple. Hands on my knees, shaking ass on my
That Shit. So we know that there's certain artists like Megan, Cardi, some others that when they put out a record, it immediately goes up on TikTok and there's usually some type of dance involved and it becomes like a thing. And so what happens is the Black TikTokers always start it and then the white TikTokers always copy it.
And the white they go viral with it.
They go viral with it and they get all the props and all the followers and all the, you know, the financial shit that comes with that. They end up on fucking Jimmy Fallon and the NBA All-Star Game and all this other stuff. While the Black, in that case specifically, there was a Black girl who started that dance. Renegade dance.
No, I'm Savage.
Oh, that was Savage? Okay.
Well, both of them. Yeah, the Renegade. There was a Black girl that started Savage too and the Renegade dance.
Yeah, Renegade got stolen too. Black girls
that did the Savage one. And then the Renegade one was Jalea Taylor, I think was her name.
Okay, cool. So now there's a girl, the Black TikTokers have decided we're not going to do a dance for this That Shit record because we're tired of our shit getting stolen. So I saw one guy, he kind of like did this little two-steppy thing and then did like his fingers up like this, like fuck y'all basically. And so it's been interesting because there's been these threads of all these white TikTokers trying to come up with a dance, but they can't because they
nobody
can't dance.
Black came up
and
with it.
Nobody Black came up with the shit first. So they're basically flailing their limbs and literally flailing trying
and doing
to figure
everything
out
except putting their hands on their knees or shaking their ass.
What the record is literally telling you to do.
and not only that, they are ironically, a bunch of them are ironically shooting the bird in their video.
Yep.
Copying the dude who was basically saying, fuck literally, the caption was, fuck y'all, TikTok ain't shit without Black people.
Exactly.
And they're still like shooting the bird, bobbing side to side, putting their hands up like the inflatable things at car dealerships.
Mm-hmm.
Like everything, even the one, there was one girl who actually got the ass shaking right. No hands on knees, bitch.
No hands on your knees. Shake your
ass.
So it's very interesting to watch these young kids flex their power. And I'm loving it.
The sound, it's just a bunch of white girls with their hands in the air walking the camera.
Because now it's turned into white girls, like, for some reason, throwing their hands in the air from side to side. And it's like, somebody put these remix lyrics, they said, hands in the air, what did they say? Hands in the air, flailing around on my white shit or something like that, which is more accurate.
Yeah, I'm loving this. What did y'all think about it?
I love
these kids, man.
It's fascinating to watch. And it's fascinating how, like, evident it is. Like, y'all really don't know what the fuck to do, right? Like, y'all literally have no idea what the fuck to do with yourselves. And it looks like it's going to become kind of like a Harlem Shake thing where all of a sudden white people was just doing randomness with the song that had nothing to do with the actual Harlem Shake, which exists. My only concern is how, because I feel like this might start to become a thing. And there are a couple of TikTok creators who created a dance, but it's really complicated choreography that people can't pick up quickly. And my only concern is, like, is this going to impact, you know, the streams that the song picks up from TikTok views? That's all.
Yeah. This is, what do you think, Inka?
It isn't, though, because the sound is still getting picked up. It's still
the music is being played.
You know
played.
What I'm saying?
The music
it's
is being
played on the app. I don't know how you like measure that.
Yeah. So it's very interesting. It's very interesting. I'm gonna watch this because, like I said, I just love what these kids are doing, how these kids are flexing, and what they're doing, and how they see they have this power, and I want to know how they use this power more because they're not gonna let it go. now that it's confirmed that they do have this type of power, they're not just going to be like, okay, now we're going to start doing dances again for y'all to steal. They're going to, you know, they're going to force somebody's hand in some kind of way. Yeah, so I'm going to watch that. And that is it for the week.
I think we covered everything.
I think someone was going to tell you to watch Inca, some TV shit.
I watched Ready to Love. It's still terrible.
We'll talk about it next week because I think next week's the finale, right?
No, I think we got two more.
Next
week they meet the families, and then they decide if they're gonna make a commitment. But somebody else.
I know we got what's it called this week? Put a Ring on It. Put a Ring on It comes on Saturday. Yes, so we're gonna get into that too. We're gonna wrap it up, and we're gonna let Inca go play with Ivy. And Ivy's still got not.
We're hoping that Ivy will feel better. Yeah. Yo, 4th of July is like right here, which is great.
It's around the corner. It's like about a week.
2 weeks.
Away.
Yeah.
Yeah. So God bless.
All right, y'all.
All right, y'all. Go vote.
Later.
See y'all later.
And that's what's popping in the world of entertainment. Thank you for listening to the Pop Life Podcast with Jeffrey, Naima, and Sean. Want to be a part of the show? We've got three ways you can get involved. Like us on Facebook. Send us your burning questions to poplifepodcast@gmail.com and follow us on Twitter @poplifepodcast.